Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Lance Mendel, I am John Schmelk. The phone number is 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you want to talk to us that way. Obviously, a very disappointing loss for the New York Football Giants. No other way to get around it, Lance, but that, a 27-24 defeat to the Philadelphia Eagles, a back-and-forth seesaw game in the fourth quarter that ended in the most improbable of ways. A rookie kicker that was claimed off the practice squad just 2 weeks earlier, who was one of three career field goals before the kick, makes a 61-yard field goal attempt to send the Giants home and to 0-3. And it's funny, Lance, before that kick, and there's so many aspects of this game we'll get to. We'll get to them, I promise you. When he lined up for that kick, I felt so good about it from a Giants perspective. I thought there was a better chance of Beckham catching a short kick and returning it for a score, because there's so many big players in the field, it's hard to cover that, than there was for him to actually make a 61-yard field goal. But I give the kid credit.
Oh, absolutely.
I think would have been good from 65, just inside the upright. I think it actually grazed it a little bit, and it's just a devastating loss for the Giants.
I mean, listen, everything that had to go right went right on that kick.
Yeah.
From the snap to the hold to the wind to the direction. You got to tip your cap sometimes to the opposition. And I also think it's interesting, and you alluded to this, the fact that, you know, he was with the Cincinnati Bengals. Caleb Sturgis gets hurt in week one, and then they bring in Jake Elliott off the Bengals practice squad after he had lost the starting job to Randy Bullock. He was the Bengals' fifth-round pick this year. Not a great deal of experience. And also remember, this is a kicker that missed a 50-plus-yard field goal earlier in the game and then wound up hitting not just one field goal, but the 46-yarder to tie the game within the last minute of the contest.
No question about it. And obviously, a lot of reasons for the loss. I'll touch on the one quick positive first before we move on to the bad stuff. And the offense did come alive a little bit in that fourth quarter, Lance.
Scored all their
points. The Giants scored more than 20 points all in one quarter, surprisingly, for the first time in 10 games going back to last season. The passing game got going a little bit, and it was spread out. It was Shepard, it was Beckham, it was Marshall. All three guys got involved in the action. And that has to be at least somewhat encouraging moving forward. They used a very, very quick passing game. Pro Football Focus sent out their game review yesterday, and I believe Eli Manning drop back time was on average something like 1.84 seconds before he threw in. It was the, I think, quickest in the league or second quickest in the league from the games yesterday. So they got the ball out quick to try to neutralize the Eagles' pass rush, which for the most part worked. The Eagles banged up secondary, played a lot of soft defenses, opening up a lot of those slant routes. So the offense maybe can take some of that momentum into future weeks here to try to get something going a little bit.
Yeah, I think they helped out their offensive line by getting rid of the football very quickly. That's certainly been well documented. And, you know, he was utilizing a variety of different receivers. They were trying to get the guys out into open space, John, and rely on yardage after the catch, much more so than going for the home run down the field. The other thing that I don't think should be overlooked, the running numbers are nothing to write home about and nothing to jump off the page. But Darkwa was the focused guy in the offense in the fourth quarter. If you look at all the drives before, he obviously suffered the back injury.
And he had the 120-yard run.
He had the 20-yard run, but then he had the 11-yard catch. And when they stuck to Darkwa, it seemed as if that provided a little bit more balance within the offense. Not an overwhelming amount of success, but my point is, when you stick to one back, I think that gains a little bit more rhythm.
I mean, to me, it's hard to get too excited about it because because all his yards came on one run. I mean, he had 7 carries for 22 yards, and he had a 20-yard run. So he was 6 carries for 2 yards in the rest of his carries.
Well, I'm also looking at the 11-yard catch, though, and him being the one guy on the field for the majority of the fourth quarter. And when you stick to one guy, you're able to at least build a little bit more rhythm, and then you're telling Philadelphia, there's the threat of us running up the gut with this guy. You need to account for that. And that, I think, at least maybe opened things up a little bit better for Eli in the fourth quarter.
And then, of course, some of the stuff that went wrong, and I think it starts with the run defense, Lance. I mean, this team last year, you could argue, was the best run defense in football. Statistically, they were the second best. And whether it's the loss of Jonathan Hankins or whatever the case might be, this run defense simply is not the same this year. They've given up more than 100 yards in each of their 3 games. They gave up nearly 200 yards in the game yesterday to the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles finishing with 193 rushing yards in a game where Darren Sproles got hurt early in the contest and didn't even play. You're talking about Smallwood, Blunt, Clement, Wentz, and that Sproles had 11 yards before he got hurt. And they did a good job against Carson Wentz. Just 176 yards passing, 21 completions, one touchdown. You know, they controlled the Eagles' passing game, but for a team that has struggled to run the football, they ran all over the Giants' defense yesterday.
Well, Wentz didn't have to throw the football. I mean, here's the story of the game, John. They ran the ball 39 times. He threw the ball 31 times. Coming into the game, the Eagles had such a huge disparity in terms of pass plays versus run plays. I mentioned this on our pregame show. 85 pass plays to 41 runs. They had 41 runs in the first two games combined. They nearly matched that total in yesterday's game alone, because the running game set the tone. LeGarrette Blount they utilized early in the game compared to what they did against the Chiefs, where he didn't get one carry, and they were milking the clock. They put together, what, that 18-play, 90-yard drive that ate up the entire second quarter. And this is a copycat league. They certainly looked at what the Cowboys and the Lions did, and those two teams had some ups and downs, the Lions more so than the Cowboys in terms of the run game, and they said, we're not going to put the game in our quarterback's hands. We're going to utilize our run game. And they used a variety of different backs, and they were extremely successful.
Yeah, and Blount had a couple runs early in the game up the middle of that game, some yards. But again, yeah. Lance, it was the same stretch plays to the perimeter.
Off the edge.
That the Giants really struggled with, whether it was Clement who had the 15-yard touchdown run. Smallwood had a 20-yard run on that final possession to help the Eagles tie the ball game before the possession before their game-winning kick. And they just have had issues doing a good job on the edge. And I think late in the game, some of it probably had to do with Olivier Vernon.
Absolutely.
And his injury. And who knows how serious that ankle is. We'll find out more. And Ben McAdoo has his conference call at around 10 after 1 today. But he couldn't return. And we all know how tough Olivier Vernon is. For him to not be able to play through it probably tells you that he was relatively hurt, where we'll see if he's going to be available next week. And if you can't stop the run, it's hard to win football games. And it's really that simple.
Well, and also you're not putting the opposition in precarious situations on third down. Now, with that being said, John, the Eagles, I felt, faced a number of third downs where they had to gain 8 or so yards. But Carson Wentz's mobility helped them get around that. And the other killer, aside from not being able to stop the run, penalties.
Are you going there?
Yeah, well, you read my mind. I was waiting to interpret that. 10 penalties for over 130 yards.
That was me throwing a flag.
Yes.
By the way.
No, I completely interpreted that. I hope the audience paid attention as well. But, I mean, that, to me, was a huge Achilles heel for this team yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to hear, oh, it was just the defense. I have the breakdown. The penalties were across the board. The offense was responsible for 6 of them. The defense was responsible for 3 of them. And then you had one on special teams, which wasn't a killer. It was when Dwayne Harris tried to signal for a fair catch, and it was invalid.
Now, you can argue that maybe some of the defensive ones were more painful because there were spot fouls on pass interference, so they're obviously bigger penalties. If you go by yardage, I would bet the defense probably accounted for more penalty yards.
The 2 on Eli Apple, certainly.
Correct. And, you know, that's another thing. Eli Apple's got to play a little bit better. Not sure I agree with that second pass interference call. I know he kind of hooked them a little bit, but I thought
they
that
were
was
fighting.
I thought they were fighting, and I thought that should have been a no call, to be honest with you. The first one was obvious.
The first one you can't argue.
There's no arguing that.
He went to tackle him.
Exactly. So those things have to get cleaned up. I mean, they just have to. The Giants' pass defense was excellent last year, and Eli Apple was excellent last year. And coming out of college, the big hit on him, Lance, was he did not do a great job looking back at the ball. He seemed to fix that for the most part last year, where we've seen that kind of
2 straight games now
come up as an issue early this year.
The Marvin Jones touchdown, and now the 2 plays in terms of Alshon Jeffrey and Torrey Smith. Now, I agree with you that the defensive penalties were a killer because they gave the Eagles field position, but the Giants' offensive penalties were examples of them shooting themselves in the foot.
Absolutely.
And probably the biggest one, John, and I'm curious your perspective.
There were a couple of them. So.
There were. No, but this one in particular, first of all, it was so rare. It was just as rare as the 61-yard field goal.
John Jerry.
Mm-hmm. Holding a defender and getting called for a delay of game penalty. And based on the replay, I thought it was a legitimate hold.
Oh, it was.
So, I mean, I don't think there's anything to argue.
He didn't hold him well. He didn't execute the hold well, but he certainly tried and had him long enough for it to be a penalty. And the thing that would annoy me the most is if he didn't even try to hold him, the guy probably still wouldn't have gotten off the field in time.
That's fair.
I don't think so, at least.
Yeah, it wasn't as if he was a wide receiver that he was holding.
No.
Yeah.
He was not.
Point well taken. But the reason why I think that shouldn't be overlooked is it's 3rd and 2. Paul Perkins gets the first down on that play. And it's easy to just overlook that play.
On a pass out of the backfield.
7-yard gain, right? Mm-hmm. So Now, all of a sudden, you're knocking further on the door in the red zone. Instead, it becomes 3rd and 7. They ultimately did get the 3 points, and we could play the coulda, woulda, shoulda game.
But it could have been 7.
There you go. And that was late in the game. If this is the first quarter, I would argue schemes change, philosophies change. You can overcome that. But this was late in the contest. So that, to me, was one that really hurt them. And then Eric Flowers was called for 2 penalties on the last Giants possession where they ultimately had to punt. Brad Wing wound up shanking the punt, just a 28-yard gain. And then the Eagles, the pass to Alshon Jeffrey, sets up the field goal. And by the way, another quick side note, it just goes to show you, the ball can bounce your way 1 year, and then all of a sudden the ball doesn't bounce your way the following
sometimes
year.
Sometimes you have breaks, sometimes you don't.
It reminded me of week one last season in Dallas. Dallas throws to Terrence Williams. DRC makes a play to deny him the opportunity to get out of play quick enough, and then the Cowboys can't get Dan Bailey an opportunity at the game winner. What happens yesterday? Jeffrey makes the play, gets out of bounds, and that sets up the game-winning field goal.
And by the way, a play that I think Janoris Jenkins had a decent chance of making, but Eli Apple, trying to do the right thing, by the way, of going back there and making a play on his own, runs into his own guy, and that prevents Janoris Jenkins from making that play. I agree. I thought the defense, for the most part, was, I guess you can say that if you want to, you know, point at one side more than the other, I'd probably put this game more on the defense than the offense, I guess. The offense did give the team 2 leads in the fourth quarter late, and the defense couldn't hold them. I mean, they let the Eagles score a field goal and a couple field goals to win this ball game and a touchdown at 21-14. So, I mean, you would have hoped that given their skill last year and the way they won games late last year, that the defense would have been able to hold the Eagles at least one of those 3 times on either the touchdown or the 2 field goals. And I think that's the difference. I think Art Stapleton either tweeted this or wrote it yesterday. This was the type of game that last year the defense would have gotten the stop and the Giants would have won the game.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's a very good take in terms of them being on the field a lot late last season. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget. And then the defense getting the interception, making the stop. This brought back memories of 15, John, where the defense is on the field late and the opposition comes through, whether it be a touchdown or a field goal. So that's what this, to me, was a glimpse of. 2 other things that I wanted to bring up in terms of strategy, scheme, play calling. The Shane Vereen play in which he ran out of bounds, I didn't necessarily have an issue with it. And here's why. Because I think that you have to look at it through the lens of the Giants are trying to get in field goal range, John. And I don't think Vereen at that point is saying we're going to get into a 3rd and 15 and Engram's going to be 1 yard shy and I have to worry about leaving less amount of time for the Eagles. That's how I was trying to look at it that way.
I think it depends how you look at it. It was 2nd and 18. That pass to Vereen, he's only a couple yards past the line of scrimmage. I think at that point, you need to have a little bit of awareness and realize the chance of us converting a 3rd and 15 is probably pretty low. And even if you convert that 3rd and 15, you're still going to only be at your 35-yard line with 19 seconds to play. And the chance of you putting yourself in position to kick a game-winning field goal, possible, mind you, because the Eagles did it just a few plays later, but slim. I thought it was a mistake. I think it's not a bad mistake, but I did think that on Vereen's part, it was not the best decision to go out of bounds. But I understand why he did it, too.
Correct.
Which is why I'm not going to light him up and put him on fire for it. I get why he did what he did, and it makes sense, and I think it's a borderline decision.
That's fair.
But in the heat of the moment, it's tough to make that call. Your natural instinct end of game is to get the ball, get out of bounds, and stop the clock. That's your instinct. But obviously, I think if he goes down in bounds, things are probably a little bit different. But here's the quick thing, Lance. Things might not have been different anyway. Because people forget this. The Eagles finished that half with a timeout left. So if he doesn't go out of bounds, maybe the Eagles use their timeout there. And the clock stops with that amount of time anyway. And they didn't end up needing that timeout at the end of the game because Jeffrey got out of bounds. So the whole thing might not have changed anyway.
They canceled each other out. No, I think that's a great point. I mean, you always think about it at the moment, but then I think when you consider how it played out,
it might not have meant anything.
It may have really not meant anything. I'm just bringing that up because I know there were a number of people that were critical of Shane Vereen's decision to do that. The other thing is the Shepherd touchdown, or the non-touchdown, I should say. And everybody going back to what is a catch, what is not a catch. They made it very clear, the NFL, that when your momentum is going towards the ground, you have to complete the catch. The caveat, John, is, did you have enough time to establish yourself as a runner?
Yes.
And if you go to the wording of the rule book, that's why I'm bringing up that phrase. Shepard got both feet in. I don't think that's up for debate. Got both feet in.
He got 3 feet in, actually. He got three feet in.
I mean, it wasn't like borderline, oh my God,
correct,
is he going to make it? He
absolutely
made it. Okay, but I then interpreted it as his momentum was still going towards the ground.
That's not your interpretation. That's the rule. That's the rule. And Bob Pop and I in the booth immediately knew it was going to be an incomplete pass. We asked Eli Manning in the locker room after the game. He immediately said, you have to maintain control of the ball. And here's how I'll try to put it for Giant fans. It's the same rule that makes a receiver defenseless. And let me explain what I mean by that. A receiver is a defenseless receiver until he establishes himself as a runner and can reasonably avoid contact.
Yeah.
So my question for you is this, folks. If after Sterling Shepard caught that ball, an Eagle comes out of the corner of the end zone and has a helmet-to-helmet hit on him, would that have been a 15-yard personal foul penalty for a hit to the head on a defenseless receiver? And the answer is yes. It absolutely would have been. Because Shepard had not yet completed the act of the catch
himself as a runner
and become a runner yet.
That's the best way to interpret it.
And there's no doubt in my mind, if he gets a helmet-to-helmet hit before he hits the ground, that's going to be a penalty. And it should have been a penalty, obviously, because he had not yet established himself as a runner. It goes back to the Dez Bryant play against the Packers a couple years ago, the Calvin Johnson play people have talked about.
Yep.
I mean, and if you want to go back even further, though this interpretation of the rule wasn't put in quite yet, the Larry Donnell play in the end zone against the Redskins, where he came down, but he didn't have it long enough. The ball got knocked out, and it turned into an interception. So, yeah, I know it wasn't even close enough for the league to put him into the hood to review it,
and it was under 2 minutes.
Exactly.
So they are entitled to then review it because
correct,
everybody's wondering, well, why didn't McAdoo throw the flag? He doesn't have to.
No.
Under 2 minutes, it's in the hands of the league to do that.
Couple other plays for me, Lance, real quick that I want to get to because I'm sure the fans are going to want to talk about them. I don't know what Dwayne Harris was thinking on the illegal fair catch signal because, quite frankly, I think that penalty flies under the radar because if he doesn't commit that illegal fair catch penalty, the Eagles aren't put in the position that they are late in the game. So I think that was an under-the-radar penalty that people don't talk about a whole lot about, which I think was a bad one. Obviously, Brad Wing executed his punt poorly, which set the Eagles up for the field goal. He stood up like a man after the game and said it was a bad kick, it was my fault, bad execution. We know that. The Shepard deep play for a touchdown I want to touch on, that made me think of the Ravens game last year.
With Odell Beckham.
That was almost the same exact play that the Giants ran against Baltimore. And quite frankly, the Eagles played a ton, and I was surprised when I saw this, they played, Lance, a ton of single high safety in this game. When you haven't seen a team play a lot of single high safety against the Giants in months, you go back to midseason last year, the last time a team played a lot of single high against the Giants. And I get why they did it. They played a lot of really soft coverage at the corners because all their guys were hurt. They had one safety deep, and Shepard caught a great pass from Eli Manning. We just did it on Inside the Film. It'll be on Giants.com later on today. Eli fits this ball in between three Eagles, a corner and two linebackers in a really tiny window, hits Shepard in stride. Their single high safety takes a really bad angle on the play.
He was out of position.
And Shepard goes for the end zone. So that made me think, and you know what, maybe those would be just like the Baltimore game last year where the offense was struggling the whole game. Then all of a sudden, end of the game, bing, bang, boom, big play, big play, big play, score. But then at the end, things didn't work out the way they wanted to.
Well, complimentary football, it goes back to. When
yep,
special teams and defense doesn't help. The other takeaway from your point about the Shepard play, mm-hmm, is we have to see what other defenses do moving forward. I wouldn't necessarily guarantee that everybody's going to adopt Philadelphia's philosophy, because we didn't see Detroit and Dallas do that. And the only reason why Philadelphia made some of those changes is because, as you noted, John, there was injuries across the board at the safety position, at the corner position. But, you know, when you start to look ahead at some of these other teams, if they're not going to be decimated by injuries, I don't see them relying on a single high safety. And they're also not going to be relying on Chris Maragos, who's mainly a special teams player.
Correct. And I should bring up, by the way, and I remembered it incorrectly. I just checked it out to make sure that I was right, and I wasn't. Two plays after that Harrison Valifair catch was the Shepard long play. So it really didn't have that much of an effect, which is my mistake. I wanted to double check that to make sure I got it right.
Right, penalty,
right.
Too.
It was. Yeah. But it looked like it could have been a big return, too.
That's fair.
So just something to keep in mind. But you're right. There was enough blame to go around, and, you know, the whole not playing complimentary football thing, it applied here. You know, in the last two games, it was the offense not complimenting what the defense did. And in this game at the end, it was the defense not being able to complement what the offense was able to do.
And special teams.
And special
throw in
teams
there, too.
So.
Yeah, you can't overlook that.
And, by the way, and I know it was a quick passing game, give the O-line some credit. Eli Manning was not on the ground a whole lot in this game.
He dropped back 47 times. He wasn't sacked once.
Right. Now, again, he talked about how fast he got rid of the ball. It wasn't long drops. We get all that. But still.
Well, and that was to overcome, you know, it's about adjustments.
And that's the thing. The other thing I was going to say. People want to kill Ben McAdoo for not making adjustments. That was an adjustment. The way they ran their passing game in this game was an adjustment. Just something to keep in mind. All right. Giants therapy line is open. 201-939-4513. Nick in the Meadowlands will lead us off. Hi, Nick.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hi, Nick.
You know, you guys touched on a lot of stuff, you know.
Oh, a lot of stuff happened, Nick.
Indeed. The penalties, you know, the big thing. You know, especially with Jerry, what was he doing? And you're absolutely right, Donnie. Still would have, you know, they still would have got the penalty, you know what I mean? Even if you didn't do it.
And by the way, I want to say something real quick, Nick. I can't believe the official saw it. And I know a lot of people kill the official sometimes for, like, not seeing stuff.
And then when I said that, I was like, wow, that was a good call.
That is a really good job by the official. You know, they might not even be watching that.
They're looking at where the ball is.
Exactly. They're trying to spot it.
Yeah,
the fact that somebody even saw that happen to me was like, wow, that's a really good job by the officials.
Yeah, good job.
Yeah.
But I just, you know, I hate, you know, the whole, you know, you went back and you even said something I would have said, you know, going back to Dez Bryant, you know, with coming down and, you know, Eli – he should have, you know, he almost did anyway. Had Brady numbers yesterday. You know what I mean? That should have been a fourth touchdown.
And, by the way,
rule really sucks.
Yeah, Nick, you're right. By the way, Eli played well in this game too.
It was by far
his best game of the year.
I don't want to hear it, okay, fans. I don't want to hear it about Eli. Okay, I've said it all along. I'm gonna tell you guys. I don't know if you know ESPN Radio. Rosenberg. This guy bashed me. He called me a moron. I said if this offense could just block long enough, you're going to see things start rolling. And he would call me a moron because maybe he's a diehard fan and he's not getting what he wants, you know. And I, you guys have heard me, you know. I said LeGarrette Blount. I wanted LeGarrette Blount because I didn't want him to do this to us, and I wanted him to be able to get yardage for us, you know. I wanted LeGarrette Blount, but it is what it is. And, you know, people bash you for saying, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, going to the defense, these guys, one thing you guys didn't say, you know, these guys had the ball for 38 minutes.
Yeah, but that's been a trend in the first two games. That's nothing
new.
Yeah,
I was looking at it in the third quarter. I was like, wow, the Giants had the ball for 11 minutes.
Yeah, but Nick,
and,
here's
and,
the
and,
thing.
You know,
Nick,
other games would go the other way, totally.
Yeah,
you'd
but
be
Nick,
like, oh, that's
this,
done.
Nick, this wasn't the
turned around.
Yeah, but Nick, this wasn't the offense's fault that the Eagles had the ball for 30
minutes.
No,
I'm not saying
that.
I'm just saying with
the
defense,
Eagles,
they were tired, and when we needed them to –
they couldn't make
really
stops.
Right, but they were
through,
tired,
you know,
because they let the Eagles run it on
you know,
them.
Were you guys watching the same game in the fourth quarter? Didn't the time seem to run so slow when the Giants had the ball? And then whenever that 1 second on the clock, it normally would have run off, but
home field advantage, Nick.
Clock,
that's home field advantage. That's home field advantage right there.
Oh, man, that was a kick too, man. I wanted to cover my face, you know, and I should have. Probably. You know what I mean? It reminds me of the, you know, back in 1990, you know, back in the Super Bowl, you know, almost.
Well, you also
it
have
really
to understand,
does.
Remember,
I mean,
Nick,
it was a
the
good
Giants
game,
also,
though. It really was a good game.
The Giants didn't put together a lot of lengthy drives in the fourth quarter. They relied on a lot of big plays,
you
too.
Know,
well,
they,
one big play
came up
ball,
on a lot,
and a short
though,
field.
In the beginning of the
correct.
Game, and these guys are dropping the ball, you know, 3 weeks in a row, you know. And the guys, he spread the ball around. He had a lot of catches. I mean, these guys – we all anticipated this. They can roll. They really can. The running game just is a big factor. You know, like I disagree with that play on the line whenever he, you know, I know it's hard in the moment, but I'm not saying if Perkins were in there or whoever, you know what I mean? I'm just saying he should have cut to the outside. It would have been so much better if he did. He would have had a
which
better
play?
Chance.
Well, Nick, which play?
Know Dark the play is designed
on the goal
to go
line
up the
where
middle.
He jumped up the middle. I mean,
Nick, the guy was at his feet when he got the handoff.
Yeah.
And Nick, thanks for the call. I have a lot of other people want to get into that. I'm sure we're going to have a lot of callers. And this is one thing I wanted to bring up. Nick actually kind of made me think of something from yesterday. I had people on Twitter criticizing the Giants for being in shotgun at the goal line, for running up the middle at the goal line, and then I had people criticizing them for running a sweep play, a toss play on fourth and one to Dark or earlier in the game. Well, what do you want them to do? If all three are bad play calls, what play do you want them to run? If running up the middle is bad, passing is bad, and running outside is bad, what else is left? What's left? Execute.
Execution. And listen, you have your biggest back. You're 1 yard out from the goal line. Is that asking much to punch it in? That's my question, because I don't think it's asking much.
No, you don't let Vinny Curry tackle the guy before he's even able to jump.
Well, you know, listen, running Darkwa out wide, would you say that that's his strong point? I mean, I think it's fair to say he's more effective as towards a north and a south type of runner, an uphill runner.
Well, maybe they were afraid that if they tried to run up the middle, that would happen.
Well, and I thought Malcolm Jenkins made a phenomenal play on that, too.
He got there so quick. Eric Flowers did not have time to get outside to put the block
Jenkins
on
him. The safety.
Well, that's why he's a good player.
Penetration, correct. Now, in terms of the goal line play, I've heard this brought up, and I think it's a fair point. What about the question about you have Shane Smith, why not perhaps try to use the fullback in that situation down on the goal line? I think it's a fair point to bring up, at least.
I guess, but if you're going to go over the top, the fullback gets in the way. You want him to have a clear run to the line to get that momentum to go over. You don't want a fullback in front of him in that situation.
No, because
you know
then
what I
he's going to provide more bodies in front of the running back.
Right.
Unless then with the fullback, maybe that gives you other options to not necessarily have to run up the gut.
Maybe, but they thought they could go over the top.
Of course. Well, and that's why they obviously chose that play.
And it did not work.
Yeah. And then, you know, as far as keeping 6 points off the board, because remember, there was another time they were down in the red zone and it was an incomplete pass to Shepard.
They went for it.
They went for it. My philosophy is, John, you can't say, well, they left 6 points off the board, because then the Eagles change their philosophy in terms of how they go about mounting a comeback. And maybe Elliott doesn't go for the 46-yard field goal, and they go for it on fourth down.
That was only fourth and two, I think, right, when they kicked that field goal or something like that?
I believe it was.
Yeah.
I don't remember the exact down and distance, but it certainly was a fourth down in which Elliott came out to take
that 46-yarder was on fourth and seven.
Fourth and seven. Now, a tough down, but
sure.
If the Giants have six more points, they're not settling for a field goal under those circumstances. They're going to obviously have to aggressively go for it. And speaking of aggressively going for it, boy, what a gift the Giants got in terms of Doug Peterson going for it on fourth and eight. Right.
What
around
the
midfield.
Hell was he doing?
I listened to his thought. I went back. I listened to his
pressure. Oh, what did he say?
Yeah, because I'm always fascinated
in terms
of what
say?
The opposition has to say. He claimed that during the game he speaks to his analytics team that he has upstairs in the booth, and he has them run by the percentages of conversion rates for plays like that. Now, it should be documented. Last season, the Eagles, more so than any other team, went for it on fourth down. So you have to understand that he's like that. And if you go back to the Eagles game here at MetLife Stadium last year, they went for it aggressively and left points off the board.
And generally speaking, the analytics community thinks you should go for it on fourth more than you should punt. That's a general thought from the analytics community, especially around midfield.
Yeah.
They don't believe that 30 yards of field position often means a whole lot. So they will more often side on going for it than they will on punting.
Now, he said at that time in the game, he had confidence in his defense shutting down the Giants' offense because the Giants hadn't scored anything.
Though the Giants had moved the ball up to that point, which is a difference.
But they weren't punching it in.
Correct.
So that was part of his rationale. And I thought one of the reporters asked a good question. Well, if you're relying on your analytics people and they know you're an aggressive guy that goes for it on fourth down, aren't they going to tell you what you want to hear even when it's fourth and eight? And he claimed, no, it's still ultimately my decision. But I get your point that the analytics people would argue you should go for it on fourth down because of the field position, but would they argue to go for it on fourth and eight? It's one thing to go for it on fourth and two,
absolutely.
Fourth and three, John.
No, I'm with you.
But would they argue to go for it on fourth and eight?
I'm with
that
you.
That I'm not so sure about.
Bam Bam, he's up next. What's up, Bam Bam?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing well. Right, what's up, buddy?
What do you got?
I think we can dissect the millions of different plays that happened yesterday that contributed to the loss. It was one of those things. If maybe just one play kind of went differently, they probably win the game. But I want to focus on what Odell Beckham did in the end zone yesterday. It was an utter disgrace to the uniform. When I was younger, I remember my dad telling me, I was a freshman in high school when Jeremy Shockey was in the team. My father hated him, and I couldn't understand why. And I'm starting to see it now as I'm older. I'm 31 now. Odell Beckham acted like a dog in the end zone after scoring a touchdown and then lifted his leg to say that he was urinating on the field. And when then asked about it, this was his exact quote that I'm going to read here. "We needed to make a play. We are down, what, 14-0? We need a play. We needed a spark. I don't care if you kick it from the 5-yard line on our own side." What the hell is wrong with this guy?
Maybe, isn't he, Bam Bam, the touchdown provides a spark. The celebration doesn't provide the spark.
But he was asked in response to his celebration if he thought there was anything wrong with it. That was his answer.
I don't care if you
kick it from the 5-yard line. And not only that, then he scores a second touchdown and he raises his fist. I'm assuming that was in relation to the protest. So this guy thought, before I do my protest, it's more important to me to crawl like a dog in the end zone and lift my leg and urinate on the field. Let me tell you now, the Giants should not give this guy a big, long-term contract. He wants $100 million. He is not worth it. He was acting like a psychopath on the sideline again yesterday. There's a million teams in the league that have worse receivers. Their offenses are better. They don't need him to go 0-3. They can do it without him. Frankly, the team has stunk since he got here, and I know he's a great individual talent. The touchdown he made yesterday, both of them, were ridiculous catches, but this guy does not respect the uniform. He is all about himself, and I have no interest in signing him to a long-term contract. I will hang up, fellas.
Thank you, Ben. Appreciate the phone call. I mean, I think we got to put things in perspective. I think it's easy for the knee-jerk reactions. You have to look at his resume as a whole. They don't come back in this game. He was responsible for two of those touchdowns. He played a big role in terms of helping the Giants spark that rally.
You saw both sides of the spectrum in a span of 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It was score, doing something stupid, score.
The good and the bad. That's pretty much what it is. It's the two things on opposite ends of the spectrum. And this is nothing new. We talked about this with the Carolina Panthers game and Josh Norman. We talked about it with the Ned and the Redskins game. I don't think anything we saw was out of the ordinary in terms of his personality.
I didn't care. My personal opinion on the Ned thing, I didn't care.
No,
about
neither
the
did
thing.
I. I'm just I bringing that up in right. terms of his personality, mm-hmm. the antics, and so forth. It's fair to say you should understand the rules, and you don't want to sacrifice field position on special teams, and you don't want to have Aldrick Rosas kick off at the 20. I think that's fair criticism. I don't think there's anything wrong in looking at – because remember, Evan Engram, this was two touchdowns in two games in which the Giants then had unsportsmanlike conduct
and
penalties
by the way,
following the touchdowns.
At that point, they're only two touchdowns.
Yes. That's it.
They were two for two,
two
on
for
touchdowns
two.
And in unsportsmanlike penalties.
Yeah, that's not a good trend.
That's all kinds of special right there.
So – it's fair to say, listen, there's nothing wrong with celebration. And you know, I know I've differed from Paul DeTino. I don't know if we've had great deals of conversations. I am fine with players being able to express themselves and celebrate. But I've never had a problem with that.
This gives Paul DeTino ammunition.
It does. But this also draws ammunition towards saying, you know what, the player has to take responsibility for knowing where the line should
Correct.
Be drawn, too. And players should know you have the flexibility and the leeway to celebrate, but you also have to know, and keep this in mind, John, it's been well documented, and even Ben McAdoo and the coaching staff mentioned this, the officials went around the league before the season started when they made the rule changes. They gave presentations to every single team.
I sat in the same presentation they gave to the players.
They made it clear that there is certain things you can utilize, and there are certain things in terms of body parts that you can't point to where the sun don't shine and so forth.
And I'm going to keep it pretty simple here, folks. If the crotch is involved
there
in any sort of celebration, you're going to get a penalty.
Yeah.
And the referees didn't say that, but they said anything we consider obscene or over the
exactly.
line,
yes.
it's going to get flagged. That's what the officials said to the teams in the preseason because they said the same thing to the media when they met with the media.
So that's nothing new.
That's obvious.
And that's where the player certainly has to take responsibility. I don't think anybody's denying that, anybody's debating
right.
that. But to say that players shouldn't be able to celebrate or show emotion after a touchdown
I don't think
simply because of this incident.
I don't think that's what Bam Bam meant.
No. I'm not trying to put words in the last caller Bam Bam's mouth. I'm just saying I think we tend to have these debates after there's one incident.
Right.
And also one incident shouldn't overshadow the entire career of a player. I wouldn't also go that far. to say that, well, you know, now I don't want this player to be invested in and I don't want the offense to lean on him because of the chance that he may pick up an unsportsmanlike.
So you're saying you should judge things on a case-by-case basis? What a novel concept in the world these days, Lance.
Indeed. Yes.
201-939-4513. Charles is in New Mexico. He's up next. What's up, Charles?
Gentlemen, how are you this morning?
Doing all right, could be doing better, Charles, but how are you?
No, I'm in New Mexico. Believe me, I know. You know, 90 degrees in Philly. I'm in the high desert. It was 72 yesterday. But let's go. Horrible play calling down at the goal line. I'm sorry. Anybody
which
one? Wants to bash on Eli this week, like every other week, I'll tell him to stick it. You got a Hall of Fame quarterback.
No, but Charles, I got a question. Which play calls didn't you like?
The whole first half. Come on. Here's the problem. Paul Perkins is not a running back. And the
yeah,
first caller,
is.
I forget his name. He's right. Why didn't we get Blunt? Why didn't we get Charles? We needed a power back.
Well, that's not play
and
calling.
You guys brought up a great point, too. We have a fullback. You don't put the fullback in on first and goal and just try to run it, right, at the end of the half. I mean, I don't know. Brad Wing, you can blame the punt. Also, in that last quarter, guys, remember Philadelphia? Or was it the third quarter when it was 3rd and 6? It was illegal motion, and they didn't call him, and they got a first down, and they went down there and scored.
Wait,
remember
which,
that one?
Which play are you talking about
which
now?
Play? Yeah, we talk about.
In the third quarter, it was
Giants or
six.
Philly with the ball?
What's that?
Giants or Philly with the ball?
Philly. Philly with the ball. It
okay.
was a legal procedure. They didn't call it. The left tackle was off.
Oh, yeah. On that play, Jason Peters did certainly move early before the snap. You're absolutely right about that. That's true.
Yeah.
Correct.
I mean, but it's in Philadelphia. We've been heartbroken many times. But 0-3, where is this team going to go at 0-3? I know the East is weak. You know, you got to hope the Cardinals knock off.
I wouldn't say the East is weak. But, I mean, there's depth in other divisions,
Charles. Yeah, that's the thing, Charles. I don't think the East is weak, but I think the East is so balanced, and they're playing such a tough schedule against the NFC South and the NFC West and the AFC West that the records just are going to be depressed a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And also, I know Munson probably had a concussion yesterday, but, you know, guys, we haven't drafted a linebacker, and I'm sorry. I know Goodson's been hurt, but we missed the running game. They killed us yesterday. The Eagles ran all over us like, I mean, a hot knife through butter. Come on, let's be honest. I mean, where was the run game? Where was the run defense the last couple of weeks?
Absolutely, Charles.
No one's going to argue that. I just wanted to jump in here, Charles. Munson and a concussion, we didn't hear anything on that front. Are you speculating or did you hear something?
No, he came out of the game. He looked a little woozy. He never went back in the game after that play.
If
you guys go back and watch the film, he came out. Right at the end of the third quarter, I believe, he looked a little shaken, and he never went back in.
Interesting. I'll take a look at that, Charles.
Yeah.
We haven't had any word that he's hurt or anything.
McAdoo's going to have his conference call later today.
No, I mean, McAdoo has it, but he didn't go back in the game after that, which was kind of, you know, I was kind of, you know, well, maybe the kid got hurt because, you know, I watched him play out here in the Mountain West, but
maybe.
He's a tough kid.
Yeah, I mean, you might be right. Appreciate the call, Charles. Thank you, pal.
You guys have a good day.
You too, man. Yep. Conrad in Manhattan, he's up next. What's up, Conrad? He's on line 3. How are you, buddy?
How's it going, guys?
Doing all right, Conrad. What's up?
Tough game. A couple key points that I want to make. Lance, I believe you alluded to it earlier. That John Jerry's hole cannot happen. There's no way that this lineman is getting off the field on time for that flag not to be thrown at them. I think that's a big momentum change.
And sure it is.
That goes into the mentality of the player, right? You're supposed to know what situation you're in. You're supposed to know that you are 0-2, and you're supposed to come and you know what? The offensive line didn't have such a bad game yesterday based on the way McAdoo called the game yesterday, which I thought was good. So to get down there and you actually have a 12th man on the field, your quarterback notices it. The offensive line was actually already lined up. The guy was jumping out of the line away from the Giants to actually run off the field. So everybody knew what was happening. And for you to make that bonehead play, I just did not like. My second point that I want to make, Eli Apple, he kills me every week. This is the third week I'm sitting here looking at my TV, or if I'm in the stadium going, Eli Apple, turn your head. Eli Apple, turn your head. And he refuses to do that. I have no idea the reason why that, you know, he's just basically just not going back to his technique. To my last point, I look at a character of our lines, right? I love the character and the grit and the grittiness of our defensive line. I do understand that, you know, the ball has been, you know, They haven't been able to stop the run as much as you would like. But the third downs, they've been able to get off the field on third downs, which was something that I think we struggle with. When I look at our offensive line, if I have fourth and one to go, or even fourth and inches, I'm nervous and scared to put them on the line knowing that they're going to get me a yard. I'm sorry, I'm just afraid of that, especially on fourth down. I believe that, you know what, even though it happened, we didn't get the fourth and two, but I think in the end zone right there, you have Brandon Marshall, you have Odell, you have your tight ends. Just, I'll put it in Eli's hand. You know what, go get me a touchdown right there. I'm not running that ball just because of the offensive line have not shown me all year. They have the grit and the I don't know. I'm going to guess Kurt.
Well, Conrad,
Conrad, I get it. Look, they had a third and one. They ran it. They got minus four. And they had a fourth and one at the goal line, and they had a minus two. So, yeah. Trust me, I get it, and thanks a lot for the call.
Yeah, I get that point, but I also don't agree that then you become one-dimensional and you only throw in those
situations.
You
have to be willing to do both.
You have to be able to pound the football, whether or not you have full confidence, because you need to keep the defense guessing. And, you know, on that topic, the Giants were 3 of 10 on third down yesterday, John. But that doesn't tell the whole story, because they did not have unfavorable third downs.
No, they were third and short a lot.
7 downs for 6 yards or less out of the 10 third downs. That's good.
How many were
that percentage.
3 or do you have a further breakdown?
Well, this is my breakdown, which I think tells the story. They had 4 third and ones and third and twos. 4 of them. How many do you think they converted?
1.
There you go. That can't happen. They were 1 for 4 on 4 plays where they had to pick 1 or 2 yards up on third down. Those are the percentages you want in terms of down and distance.
Did you include fourth downs in that too or no?
No, I only do the third downs. Now you're asking me to build a new chart now.
No. I'm just saying that
I didn't even notice how many fourth downs they had.
If you included the fourth downs, it's worse.
I didn't notice how many fourth downs. I didn't.
Well,
you know,
I know they had the 1 fourth and down on the Baltimore play was certainly
correct.
A failure, and
yes,
that was a fourth and one.
But let's see. How many did they have? Fourth downs, they had 2. They were 0-for-2 on fourth down yesterday.
And let me see if I can find what the first one was. Fourth and
one. Remember what the down. Or wait, was that the one where Shepard, the incomplete, where they were in the red zone on the 13-yard line for Philadelphia?
That was either a 4th and 2 or a 4th and 3,
I think,
right?
It was a 4th and 2.
So fourth and 2, Manning incomplete to Shepard, and then
there you go.
The dark will play was
a fourth and goal from the 1.
Fourth and goal from the 1.
Okay, so it makes it even look even worse. Then,
one
for 6 when you had to pick 1 or 2 yards up on third or fourth down. Favorable
hard
down
to win
and
that
distance.
Way.
Yeah. See, in the previous games, we could argue, boy, they were in a number of third and longs. They were overwhelmed by penalties. This was a game where even though the first half was a struggle to move the ball at times, or at least punch it in, I should say, the down and distance was favorable, and they still could not convert. That's troubling.
Jason Vermont, he's up next. Hi, Jason.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing well, Jason. How are you?
All right. A couple calls ago, a guy kind of brought up a question. Linebacker, middle linebacker, do you think that's a problem with our run defense, how we can't get it going, or?
Well, B.J. Goodson's absence cannot be overlooked. The guy had 18 tackles in the opener. I think it would have been nice to see him build upon that. As far as
in fairness, though, in the opener, the Cowboys still did go for 100 yards.
They did. But, correct. You know, you didn't feel as if
it wasn't like the last 2 weeks.
Correct. Game-changing type of close-it-out plays. I think, though, the defensive line, John, cannot be overlooked in terms of the running game.
And a couple times yesterday, and I know the Eagles early did a lot of stuff on the edges, but I saw a couple times where, you know, Dalvin Thomas maybe got a little too aggressive trying to shoot a gap, and the Eagles ran right to where he was going to be, and they had a couple long runs that way. The other stuff was containment and getting off blocks on those sweep plays. I think Vernon he played on that hurt ankle for a while, by the way. He hurt that ankle pretty early in
the game.
Tried to play on it. I think that, you know, probably hurt him a little bit. With the Heat, I noticed, at least I thought, that they rotated Snacks off the field maybe a little bit more in this game than usual because of the Heat. Yesterday,
because Bromley was in.
Yeah, yesterday Damon Harrison played only 58% of the defensive snaps. So I don't know what that is in terms of run pass. I don't have that number. But I felt like he was probably rotated out a little bit more because of the extra Heat, which makes sense. You want to keep these guys fresh.
Oh, that's Banks' philosophy.
So I think you put all that together in the play that Carl Banks broke down on the film room today that you'll see on Giants.com later. Robert Thomas let himself get sealed on a block that opened up a huge running lane for Smallwood. So you put all those things together. Then you had some missed tackles, too. You had that one LeGarrette Blount 20-yard run in the first quarter. He ran through Darian Thompson. Then he ran through Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. And then he gave 5 or 6 more yards after contact when Landon Collins finally got him down. And so put all those things together. They're all part of the equation.
And Smallwood was bouncing off tackles, too. It wasn't just Blount. Mm-hmm. So a number of factors, essentially, Jason, to answer your question.
Also, on that Shepherd where he got the ball, and they initially ruled it a touchdown, and then they reviewed it, and then they gave it to us at, like, the 3-inch line or whatever.
Yeah, when he went out of bounds.
Yeah, you know what? That was really close. It's a good question. I don't think the ball ever broke the plane because it was in his back arm.
The way it is, they originally called it a touchdown. I don't think that there's enough evidence there to reverse a call on that.
And
is
you know
that
what?
How it's supposed to work, I would think.
That is a fair argument. If they would have came back and said the call on the field stands and not the call on the field was confirmed, I thought that would have been fine. And frankly, I thought that's what they were going to do because I thought it was really close. But if you remember, earlier in the game, I think there was a play the Eagles had where there was a spot.
Correct.
And they actually made a similar decision on a play where they did move the ball back the same way they did with the Giants, right?
Oh, I'm thinking of a different play. I thought you were referring to on the return where the Eagles tried to save it from going into the end zone. They looked at that, and then they felt that there was not enough evidence to show that he let go of the football before his body went into the end zone.
That might be the play.
I don't know if that was the one. I'm going to take a look, see if
I can find another one.
Normally, if they don't feel like they have an overwhelming amount of evidence, and you know, after watching those replays, I thought he got rid of the ball in time to save it, to then down it to one or the two.
I thought the second guy's foot might have been touching the goal line. I thought
it was close, and that's why I guess I understood why they said, you know what, we're going to leave the initial call. With the Shepherd one,
the LeGarrette Blount play, where they called it a touchdown at the goal line, getting the ball over,
elbow,
and they called that back. That's the play
I was thinking of. Okay, now I know.
It was either his hip or his elbow that hit first. I'm not sure which one.
Yes.
And that was also close. I thought that might have been inconsequential, too, to be honest. I thought that was a very close one.
The very next play, he punched it in anyway. But
Correct. Still,
it just shows you the example of when it's not necessarily specific, they will lean on just keeping the initial call.
But that's a fair point. If they would have said it was inconclusive, I would have bought that on that play, absolutely.
And then you wouldn't have had all the other questions about all the other plays for the rest of that series. So
it's funny how it goes. Appreciate the call, bud.
Well, but you know what? Another caller brought this up, John. In terms of the play calling, I know a number of people are bringing up the 4th and goal from the 1, but, you know, Shepherd was in a position to get into the end zone twice. Is that worthy of criticizing the play calling or just the player not executing the play, specifically on the 2nd one where Shepherd did everything he needed to but then didn't complete the process?
Yeah.
That's not play call.
No, the guy's open. It's a score. And look, Shepherd has to know he has to hold on to the ball. But and Bob Poppin made this point, and he's made it on the radio with Bill Polian before, and I think it's a really good one. Going out of bounds by the sideline in the end zone over there, there's so many photographers that if a player is trying to defend himself from running into like some type of obstruction out of bounds, whether a person, a camera, something else that's over there, I get why they might try to rethink that rule if a player is trying to protect themselves from, you know, running headfirst into a camera or something like that. That wasn't the case with Shepherd. They had cleared a path for him, but there were people close to him over there too. So I do think with the sideline in the end zone, there are, you know, some situations where you might be like, maybe they have to adjust that rule a little bit.
Well, I have no problem with that, but I think to your point, did that apply to the Shepherd play?
No.
My answer would be no. He had ample time to
go
down where he wasn't blocked, and he just couldn't hold on to the football.
201-939-4513. Jacob is all the way down in Jacksonville. What's up, Jacob?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing great, Jacob. What's up?
Well, first I wanted to say, out of all the guys on Big Blue Kickoff, no offense to P. Dots and Jeff Eagles, but I like you two the most.
We appreciate that, Jacob. Everybody does a great job.
I just had a couple points from the game yesterday that you guys can maybe go in depth about.
Sure.
I really want to see Vereen get more touches. I know he's had a fair amount of catches the past 2 games, but I really like what he brings to the table.
Yeah, you know, he wasn't as involved yesterday. You're right about that.
Yeah. One specific play I liked was that swing pass. I think it was in the 4th quarter where he got like 11 yards. I think it was on the first play of a drive.
Yep. I know the player you're talking about.
Yeah, I really like plays like that with him because I feel like the linebacker kind of goes with him, and that can leave open space in the middle for our tight ends and maybe Odell on the slants and all that. And the other point was the quick tempo with Eli trying to get the playoff really fast afterwards. Mm-hmm. I think we did that a handful of times. And we actually had him for 12 men on the field a couple of those times, but I think it was Ingram that wasn't set.
Yep.
And, yeah, that was really frustrating.
Yeah, that was the Giants almost trying to move too fast for their own good. And they actually tried to go fast a lot in this game. Early on in the game, even before then, you know, my always statement when people say you got to go no huddle, my point is always you got to get that first down. Otherwise, you're going to punt after 12 seconds and it's going to be over. They actually tried to go fast even before they got that first down early in the game. So for fans that wanted a better tempo, they got it in the game yesterday for sure.
Yeah, and my final point is to, you know, all the people saying the season's over at 0-3. I really think we have the potential to get on the run here, especially with these next two games. I think they're very winnable. And that's all I had. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jacob. You can't call the season over because it is possible. You go back, you have the number. What is it? Since 1993
out of 133 teams,
something like that.
Yeah.
So it's possible. I mean, you know, 2 years ago, I remember when the Giants started 0-6, the 0-4 Chargers team recently that had gone on 0-4 and gone on to make the playoffs, and Tom Coughlin was asked about that team at a press conference. So it's possible. It's just going to be really, really, really
not making it easy for themselves.
Hard.
Let's put it that way.
Especially since two out of your first three losses are already in the division.
And also all three in the conference. Remember, I mean, even if you wanted to potentially get back in the hunt for the wild card, you know, if you finished, you know, 9-7 or 8-8 and it came down to you and another team, conference record plays a big role after, you know, after common opponents. So, I mean, listen, we're really getting ahead of ourselves. No, the season's not over. Listen, the Vikings started 5-0 last year, and they wound up missing the playoffs.
They went 7-9, right?
They went 8-8.
They
finished up. So even if you get off to a hot start, nothing is necessarily guaranteed. But the goal right now has to be
win one, clearly.
But also, you know, putting a game together, John.
A complete game.
Where the offense doesn't hurt the defense doesn't hurt the offense, and then we're just going to throw the special teams in and hope that they don't do any harm. I mean, we have yet to see one game where we haven't said, you know, one team has helped out everything else.
The team
hasn't necessarily hurt everything else.
The team hasn't played well.
Yeah.
I mean, you go to an individual level, guys have made individual mistakes. As a team level, they have not executed the way they need to. It just hasn't been great, and last year, in their close games, they happened to win a lot of them and play really well. 2 years ago, it was the opposite, where they did not do well at the end of the games and they lost. And like you said, this was a game at the end that was more reminiscent of two seasons ago than 15. One season ago. It doesn't mean that's going to continue. It might be a blip on the radar. We'll have to wait and see. And that's obviously the hope, and the Giants will work to make it that way. But when you play really close games, and look, when you play the Eagles on the road, it's probably going to be a close game. Weird things happen. And a kid that's a rookie playing in his second ever NFL game, making a 61-yard kick, it's a weird freak thing. Weird freak thing. I mean, what do you think? That's a 15% kick?
May not even be that high. I mean,
it 10%
was,
kick?
First of all, it was the longest kick by a rookie in NFL history.
And this isn't a dome either, by the way.
Yeah.
This is outdoors on grass.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to Jeff Eagles after the game during our postgame show, and he said everything has to go ideal in those circumstances. Because remember, the right upright is here, and the ball is right there. And I'm holding up my hands for those who may eventually be listening to the podcast version of this. But, I mean, we're talking about so minute. The margin for error there is non-existent in terms of the way the wind blows or the angle in which you let off the kick and the leg strength. Everything went ideal, and that's why you got to tip your cap to the kicker and say, you know what, that kid did a hell of a job in a very tough spot after he missed a lengthy kick earlier in the game, and, you know, they found a way to execute, and, you know, many people could even argue after the Giants went down 14-0, I don't think anybody expected them to even bounce back in the game. So it was a surprise to see what happened and what transpired in the fourth quarter. But to get back to the larger point before we reopen the phone lines here, John, teams that go on runs are teams that are consistent. They're not Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. If you look at any team going back in history, even the Giants last year when they went on the run. When they went on the run, John, if I were to ask you, what was the identity of the Giants? Meaning, what was their bread and butter? What would I hope that every time I tuned into a game, I'd be able to rely on that?
Play good defense, take the ball away, and make some big plays on offense.
Okay, so now if I ask you through three games, do you have a grasp of what the identity of this team is?
Zero.
So that's why it's hard to say, are they going to get on a run? Are they going to start building some momentum? They've got to get to the characterization of an identity to get to the continuity standpoint.
And unfortunately, the identity thought they wanted to have this year, and Ben McAdoo desired for them, was to be a really good defense that stopped the run, play complementary, conservative offense, win with your defense. But quite frankly, Lance, with the way this defense is played, that hasn't been possible
so
far.
Can't lean on that.
Correct. So now you got to figure something else out.
And can you lean on the offense? Meaning, was the fourth quarter a sign of what's yet to come, or was it just a flash? That remains to be seen. Now, special teams, you're not necessarily relying on to win you games, but you're relying on them not to hurt you.
And they've hurt you 2 weeks in a row now.
There you go. The punt return, the shank punt, that's a killer. Have to take those things into consideration. You have to clean that up before we start speculating about and looking ahead at the schedule. Well, you know, they're capable of putting together three straight wins here.
And look, we're still learning about teams. We're only 3 weeks into an NFL season. I mean, there was a reason that yesterday was upset Sunday in the NFL.
Crazy.
I mean, I wish I was home to watch the games like I was the first 2 weeks when the games weren't very good.
But we got one of the crazy games ourselves.
Yeah, we're nuts. Yeah. They were crazy. I mean, people that were in knockout pools were getting booted left and right here.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a fun day of football. And, like, these teams are not finished products. You're still figuring out what they are. They're learning the identities. They're learning what they do well. And it doesn't make sense sometimes, but even when personnel remains the same from year to year, sometimes identities do change. 1 year a group will do something well. The next year they won't.
Can't bank on it.
It doesn't make sense sometimes. And it's hard to explain. We're still trying to explain why the Giants offense has taken the dip it has since their first couple years under Ben McAdoo. I don't think anybody knows for sure. So it just happens. And that's the NFL. That's why when everyone says, oh, it's a cliche, every year is a new year. No, every year is actually a new year. You got to figure things out every year and how to win that particular season with that particular group, which is never exactly the same from year to year.
When you could pick out five or six examples every single season of teams putting together great performances 1 year and then falling off the cliff, then I don't think it's a cliche anymore. I think that there's substance behind making those statements.
All right, Len in Columbia, Maryland. He's up next. Hi, Len. How are you?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
It's good to hear from you, Len. What's going on?
How are we doing?
Well, we may not be able to figure out the Giants' identity, but the national press is going to tell us what it is over the next 2 to 3 weeks.
They're going
to
try to.
They're going to use one word, and the word's going to be undisciplined. And it's not just the Beckham thing. It's just going to be a number of things. I mean, it's just this squad at this point is undisciplined. Enough mistakes to go around yesterday. We could pick on just about any player and find the mistakes.
Sure.
There were a boatload of them, guys. And, I'm sitting here this morning. We should have won that game. I mean, we should have won that game.
It was a very winnable game. Very winnable game, Len. Absolutely.
We should listen. I'm gonna. I could talk about 40 points here.
Yep, okay? Absolutely. Pick
40
two
people.
For me.
40 different people. I'm gonna lay blame. You guys haven't talked about it yet.
Sure.
I'm gonna lay blame.
What do you got?
You gotta kick the field goals. You're down 7-0. You're on the road. You're not playing good. You want to go in with some momentum. The crowd is hostile. Take the freaking points. Make it 7-3. Kick the second one, and we don't care if the rookie kicker kicks a 100-yard field goal. We win the game. The coach took us out of it yesterday. Ben took us out of it.
Now, Len, in fairness, you don't know how the Eagles play the second half if you have those
point.
Field goals on the board. But Len, making the argument.
You can say that about any play.
Of course you can.
But Len,
you're right. Well, making the point, they should take the point
is
a fair one. No, but Len, make it.
By the way,
I'm trying to agree with you.
I'd like to go back and look at the tape of that play down at the goal line, the run down at the goal line. I think Curry was offside. And why not? Why not take a chance? If you're a defensive lineman in that situation,
Why not take a chance?
I'll take a look at
it. And guess the snap of the ball. What happens to you if you miss and they call a penalty?
Half the distance.
We're
who cares?
On the quarter yard
right,
line.
Exactly.
Big deal.
That's, you're right about that. Good point. Yeah.
Big deal. I don't know why defensive linemen don't do that more often in that situation. Just take the chance. Listen, Curry was it. Well, I don't want to talk about the play because I don't think there should have even been a play. Ben should have kicked two field goals, and we're talking about a win this morning, guys. We're talking about a win. It's not the play calling. It's the decision making in those two instances.
Now, Len, I
think he's doing okay. You know, he's playing with this. He's got 46 guys.
So
he's playing with
up.
These 46 guys. He's doing okay. But, you know, so maybe the guy's kicking to time. Maybe if you kick once.
Now, Len, I understand your point, and you make good points. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just going to give you the reason why I think they went for it. I think the reason they went for it, and I don't remember Ben McAdoo saying this in the postgame press conference. I'm not sure if he was asked about it, but
no, nobody's asking
right.
that question.
And, well,
that's
no.
John,
honestly, I think they will ask it today at the conference call, and we'll have it up on Giants.com. You can find out what the answer
okay.
was.
Okay.
If I had to guess, though, what was going through Ben McAdoo's head, and again, this is just a guess. Our offense has been so inept in terms of getting down the field. Every game on the radio, when the Giants get into the red zone, I have to read, the Giants are in the Mercedes-Benz red zone. I've read it twice in the first two games. They're never there. So I think what Ben McAdoo is thinking is that we're actually in a position to get a touchdown here. I have to try to get 7. I'm not saying it ended up being the right decision. I'm just saying that was probably, in my guess mind, his thought process.
Okay.
That's it.
I was going to say the same exact thing because you're talking about a team, Len, that had one touchdown in the first two games. They scored 3 points against Dallas. They scored 10 against Detroit. And McAdoo clearly says, we're not winning games with 3 points. We're not winning games with 10
right.
points. So at that point, you got 6, let's say, based on your logic, Len. And you don't know you're going to score 24 in the fourth quarter. Remember, Len, here's the thing. You're operating. I don't disagree with your point. But you're operating on the philosophy that you already know you're scoring 24 points. Points in the fourth quarter. That's an extremely convenient philosophy to have. He's not operating under the philosophy that you're going to give him 24 points in the fourth quarter. Therefore, he has to take the aggressive approach.
Okay, listen. Beautiful answer. You're absolutely right. Just tell me, again, the first field goal, or he didn't kick the field goal the first time. We're down by the goal line. Conventional wisdom in the NFL. You're on the road in the first half. And let me add to it, you're playing a division opponent with a hostile crowd. You're going to get the ball at the start of the second half. You always take the points,
Well, but
Lance.
They went 3 and out,
Len.
You
always take the points
but,
on the road in the first half.
No, but Len,
get
you know,
on
Len,
the scoreboard.
Len, you're
get
right.
Get on the scoreboard.
Len, that would be the convention of wisdom. You are correct. And, Len, we're out of time here. We're already 1-2.
Okay,
we got to
okay,
run.
Buddy.
Appreciate
yeah.
the call.
Okay,
thank
buddy.
You, Len. Good talk.
And we totally understand what you're saying. Do we have one more call still up, or did he drop off? He's gone? He dropped? Okay.
No, go ahead.
That is conventional wisdom, but I think the Giants' offense and their 0-2 start make somebody try to buck conventional wisdom, and it makes me go back when we had this conversation, boy, 3 or 4 years ago, I guess it was 3, when the Giants' defense couldn't stop anybody.
I was going to
And they were giving
an
up
example,
a
yeah.
bajillion points. A bajillion. It was a sieve, and they couldn't get a stop. And everyone's yelling at Tom Coughlin for going for it on fourth downs to score touchdowns instead of kicking field goals. Well, do you know what Tom Coughlin was thinking? My defense is giving up 38. I can't win with field goals. And I think, like I said before, Ben McAdoo's like, guys, we just never get down here. We got to get 7. Now, in the end, did it work out the way you wanted it to? No. But the thought process, I get both sides of the issue, and I think there is logical points besides both sides of the argument.
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of having an opinion.
Correct.
When there's not necessarily a fact that is going to give somebody the win, you can make cases on both sides. And I'm glad you referenced 2 years ago. The game that jumped in my mind, I don't know if you remember this one, it's 2015, the Jets overtime victory, 23-20, and I was looking to reference the play. This was a situation where it was 4th and 2 on the Jets 17. Coughlin elected to go for the field goal.
And what was the score at that point?
It made it 20-10. And then, remember, the Jets wind up tying the game and then winning it in overtime. And I remember having a conversation on this very same program. No, he should have went for the touchdown. The defense is not going to make any stops. Now the defense is having trouble again, and now we're arguing to take the field goal. So it just goes to show you that, you know, every circumstance clearly changes the debate, but I can't operate, and I know it's easy to go 20-20 hindsight. I can't blame a coach not knowing that he's going to get 24 points in the fourth quarter to say, my offense has only put forth one touchdown in the first two games. I'm going to try to punch it in right here.
And you're trying to set the tone, I think, for your team, too. You're trying to instill confidence in them and all that sort of stuff. But it didn't work out. Guys, thanks for joining us. We got to run and get on that Tom Coughlin test.
Well,
on
we have Coughlin on our mind.
Exactly.
Today, so
it's
our own fault.
On that Ben McAdoo conference call, and we'll get some more answers over the Giants' loss to the Eagles yesterday. For Lance Benoit, I'm John Schmelk. Tomorrow, you got Russ and Deal on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll see you then.
Have a good one.